This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy game day, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Of course, it is Monday Night Football. Buffalo Bills at the New York Jets, wrapping up week six of the NFL season. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt hanging out with you here until 12 o'clock. I'm nervous. I'm not really that excited.
Good,
I'm very nervous.
Yeah. I am too.
Look, we were talking right before we jumped into the show here. And also, if you want to join us on Facebook Live over on Facebook, we are on StreamYard. Having a lot of fun today. I decided to wear a sweater. I completely forgot we were doing this. It was just cold outside and like rainy and kind of gross.
Over the weekend, I did the old bring all of your winter stuff out of storage.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I had two big tote bins full and I opened it up. I'm like, oh, my old friends.
Already.
The hoodies, the flannels. This flannel was in storage for the past like 6 months.
Yeah,
so happy.
You're somebody that gets excited for this. I'm like, this is the worst.
See, but now you're a flannel guy. You got flannels.
We'll see. We'll see.
No,
I have flannels.
You
we
are
will
flannel
see
guy.
If I'm
also,
a flannel guy.
It's also vest season.
It is vest season. Absolutely
very happy
it is.
With that too. Because I got a nice vest for my birthday. My birthday's in April, so I can't really
wear
a vest in April. Yeah. So now I finally get to debut it. So
that'll be fun.
Feeling good. That part I'm feeling good about. The game tonight?
Yeah, less so. We're going to look at the weather for the game tonight. Patrick Hammer's going to join us in the 11 o'clock hour, around 11:30. Sal's going to join us at 11 from the game, so that should be a lot of fun. I don't know if there's going to be any kind of weather tonight in New Jersey. I'm not sure about that. But I am very nervous just because the injury report, right? I mean, like, that's kind of been the big thing. You look at just how many players were on it.
Mm-hmm.
Sixteen
total at one point in the week.
Yeah, already Ed Oliver ruled out with a hamstring injury. He picked that up in practice, so that's one, especially with a hamstring. You don't really know when he's going to be coming back. That's always a few-week thing. I mean, A.J. Brown just came back for the Eagles. He's been out since week one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got four guys that are questionable on an offense that is already not great, or is at least too up and down to really get a gauge
it's
on it.
Stumbling.
I
think that might be the best.
Stumbling.
Adjective.
There you go.
I feel like it's not that they're not there, but it's just that they're, it's like a setback. Because I feel like they had all these game plans for weeks one through three,
mm-hmm.
and then four and five, those game plans didn't work, which not great, obviously. But if you can adapt that and open up these different types of schemes that we think that this offense can have, then that's great, and you're back to being fine. But mm-hmm. the problem is you don't know if those are actually there. That's the thing. Is like if this is all the Bills' offense is, what we saw through weeks one through five so far, if that's all it is, then you have a problem. But if there's other elements to it that mm-hmm. just haven't worked in yet, then there's another conversation we have. But it's time to show your hand. It's time to show more of what you want this offense to be.
I just don't know if you have the skill position players to do so.
Well, yeah, that's
Cook's
also yet
questionable.
To be seen.
Shakir's questionable. We'll see what they're even going to get out of Curtis Samuel, who's a full participant Saturday. He has mm-hmm. no game designation, so he's in. But he was limited
for the rest of the week. And Mac Hollins was also limited for every day but Saturday.
Yep.
So,
and he was in a non-contact jersey. Samuel, you've mm-hmm. not gotten anything out of it. Honestly, I don't want a lot out of Mac Hollins. I think he's had, 12 targets in the last two games?
I want 12 targets for
way too many.
I want 12 targets for Curtis Samuel tonight. I don't care. I want them, but I want them in like meaningful targets.
Yeah.
I don't want this behind the line orbit motions, behind the line of scrimmage crap. Like I'm done mm-hmm. with that. Like it needs to be put them on a slant route, put them outside, put them just do something with them other than
this
running 2 yards down the field.
He looks like a gadget player you're paying $8 million a year for.
Right.
It just it what they've done
and
with him
one thing
so
if
far
it was
makes
working.
No sense.
If it was working, sure, cool, mm-hmm. whatever. But like it's not. And you need to pivot from that. You need to have a different strategy here. And I don't understand what the next idea is, right? Like, what's the next element of this that we haven't seen yet, and is there one there?
I don't think so, and the reason I'm saying that is we're now, what, through 21 games with Dalton Kincaid,
mm-hmm.
and they still don't have a plan for him. They tried one deep pass to him against Houston. Allen outright misses him. I mean, he's open, and they never go back to it.
I will
and
say,
I watched Detroit yesterday. Laporte is not even their main guy.
Yeah.
He's not even close. He's like their third, fourth option. They love their run game.
He just got his first touchdown of the year last night.
But they scheme him open. They stretch the field with him.
I wonder,
and
though,
I know Jeremy had it today where it's, you know, career touchdowns. I think Kincaid has four,
mm-hmm.
and Laporta has 12. Yeah. And like you said, it took to week six for him to score the first one of the season for himself.
Right. But the thing with Kincaid, though, that I also wonder about is, remember last year for the first half of the season, he was in a Dorsey offense. This is a Brady offense. And you know, there's two different people there. So
neither of them know how to use them. Well, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. Neither of them know how to use
them. Well, but see, the way I look at last season, though, is I don't know if you can technically say that Brady doesn't know how to use him because Brady hasn't even had a full year with him yet. Dorsey didn't have a full year with him, and you know, it didn't look like he was working him in that much. I mean,
we're getting close to a full year.
Through the first 10 games, which is the ones Dorsey coached him on, he had one touchdown and just over a couple hundred yards. So it's like he wasn't really that involved. I mean, remember weeks 1 through 10, we were sitting here going, okay, well, the offense is looking okay, but your new first-round tight end isn't doing much. Through those first 9 games, because he didn't play in week 6, he had 45 receptions on 51 targets for 390 yards. Oh, and 2 touchdowns, sorry,
mm-hmm.
not 1 touchdown. So that looked like, you know, hey, it's a rookie. We're working him into the offense. And then all of a sudden the offense starts to sputter and Dorsey gets fired. After that, when Brady takes over, you have about the same involvement, if not less.
It's just, but
which is
but
questionable.
I'm not using the excuse. You had the whole offseason.
Right,
you had
right.
half a
well,
season.
Yeah. And
then last week, Shakir isn't playing.
Mm-hmm.
Mac Hollins is playing, but that should not be your main option.
Right.
Kincaid should be the guy. You trade it up in the first round to go get him.
Yeah, exactly.
And so far, I consistently am looking going, why? Why did you do that? I can't for the life of me figure out what you liked in him. Because
mm-hmm.
to the start, it was think of him as a wide receiver. This is Dorsey's guy. This is how they're going to, you know, unveil the 12 personnel thing, right? The two tight ends. You know, Kincaid's going to be the final stroke in that, and they're off to the races. It's been nothing like that. They're not even getting anything out of Knox.
Mm-hmm.
For a team that doesn't have a lot of skill position players to really grab from, and we're seeing that over the Baltimore game where Shakir gets hurt and then kind of he slowly just is out of the game plan. He gets the broken play, but mm-hmm. there was a clear difference, and Houston doesn't even play. These last two games, they are desperate for someone to take over, and either they're not scheming him open, they're not scheming plays for him to like, hey, you're the main guy, or Allen's not finding him. That also could be there because I think Allen is the last 2 weeks aggressively getting away from the short stuff and wanting to stretch the field. But regardless, it's a wasted pick up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely wasted pick.
Yeah.
Because it a guy that should be part of your core group going forward is just not. I wouldn't pay him a big contract here in a year and a half.
Well,
not a
yeah.
shot.
As of right now, yes. But, I mean, I think it's just I don't think it's on Kincaid's ability. I think it's the fact that they're not using him the right way. Because Kincaid, as a pass-catching tight end, he looked like one of the best pass-catching tight ends coming out of college. And I don't think that just goes away in an offseason heading into your rookie year. That can't just disappear. The talent is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, he might have to develop a little bit more still too, but I think this is more largely on the scheme usage or the scheming and lack of usage of Kincaid. But at the same time, I look at what Brady has to work with, and I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I also can't because there's not much for him to work with. There's Shakir, Coleman, Kincaid. Those should be your three main guys.
That's kind of about it.
That
yeah.
should be your main focus. And sure, James Cook can get mixed in there too, but he's a running back. You don't have to worry about him in the passing game. If you have those three guys, Shakir never drops a ball. Coleman, you drafted to be a separator and catch these contested catches, which he's done that part very well in terms of the contested mm-hmm. throws. But Kincaid just
I mean, he's also involved. He's picking up drops too. I mean, his catch percentage last year was 80.2. It's at 62.5 now through five games. It's not great.
But it's not, I mean, that's not terrible.
His yards per perception has gone up. It was at 9.2 last year. It's at 11.1 this year. Okay. But they're not really getting him going downfield.
Yeah.
And again, there was the one play in Houston, which was like, yes, that's what you want.
That open over the middle.
And Allen underthrows it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Allen underthrows it. The linebacker's able to make a play on it.
But there was even the one, it was almost like a... I don't know if you want to call it a button hook, but he's coming back towards Allen when he catches that ball just out of bounds, or what they said was just out of bounds. I personally think it was a catch. But that play right there, that was also one where it was like, yeah, that looks nice because, hey, look, he got open. He's a pass-catching tight end that can get open. That's exactly what you drafted him for.
I mean, make a more convincing catch, though.
Yeah.
Because live, I thought he dropped it because he brings his arms like right down.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, dude, make a more convincing catch. I get it. It's not all on him.
He goes up there and gets it, though. That's the thing is you have to be able to show that ability. You have to be able to put him in a position where he can show the ability that, hey, I can go up and get this ball and come down with it because that's who I am as a player. And that's what I can do as a player. But they're not giving him that yet. And I don't know if it's Brady. I don't know if it's...
I mean, I'm willing to blame Brady. I mean, they're paying $8 million to Curtis Samuel for him to throw bubble screens.
Yeah.
I think it is on Brady. Because there's no other way it's not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what they're using Samuel for. Has Allen missed some of these throws? Yes, I bring up the deep ball against Houston, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also not scheming him open. We joked week one about how he was like nearly quadruple covered against Arizona.
Right, which you can't do much about that.
You can't do much about that, but everyone else was able to feast.
Yep.
That's not happening these last few weeks. Guys are in one-on-one battles. No one's getting open.
Right, because I think other teams are learning. And to your point earlier about the whole, you know, not having highly skilled players to do this, you don't have anyone that can break a game.
Mm-hmm.
Defenses are figuring out, hey, we don't have to quadruple cover Dalton Kincaid. We can put one guy, maybe two on him. And
which is not good.
He's fine. And then we can just cover everyone else like normal. And look, everyone's covered. Nobody eats.
And that's not good. I mean, he's a first-round tight end in a position that doesn't very often get picked in the first round. It's a lot like safety where you get your best guys in rounds 2, 3, maybe even 4.
But the best of the best should come in round 1, and they should be like an anomaly.
But now we're also kind of seeing they are an anomaly to even be good. Kyle Pitts was a top 10 pick, and we're still waiting for Kyle Pitts to arrive.
Yeah.
Brock Bowers is kind of like that guy.
Mm-hmm. I think,
defenses like week one and two probably were like, yes, you're winning Kincaid.
Mm-hmm.
Now from what I've seen, I've not seen anything that says otherwise, but now maybe they're not. And that's concerning if your number one tight end, a guy that you traded up in the first round to go get, is not getting open. That's a level of concern, especially on offense. And the reason I bring all this up now is, I mean, we talk about this a lot over the last few weeks, but you're going up against the Jets defense. The Jets team is reeling, but you don't have good games against this Jets defense. You already have a team that can't get open, and you're going up against a talented secondary. You need Kincaid to show up in this game. You need him to be good.
You also need to have him go out and have a game that kind of puts the NFL on notice, right? Because if you think about it, the first two games, it was, oh, man, this Kincaid kid, he's probably going to be their number one target. Let's cover him up. And then, you know, you almost have to just make the other team guess. You got to keep them guessing. That's what the plan was always with Diggs, Davis, and going back to, you know, John Brown, Cole Beasley. That was the plan, is you never knew who the Bills were going to throw to
because worked.
Everyone could catch the ball and do something big. Kincaid hasn't given you a reason to quadruple cover him since week two because the story's out. The secret's out. Hey, look, they're not targeting him that much. But if you can give them a reason to target or to cover him again, that can open up everyone else like it was in weeks 1, 2, and even 3. That's the problem, is you haven't given other teams the reason to cover him.
At all. Let's go to the phones. 803-0550 is the number to call. How are we feeling going into tonight's game against the New York Jets? Official pregame is going to get going at 3:00 for an 8:15 kickoff. But we start today with Anthony on the line. Anthony, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, well, guys, how are you?
Doing very well.
Excellent. Okay, so I just wanted to comment about Kincaid. So, you know, is it possible that they know he is the potential only option for the Bills, and he is, no matter what, being double covered or even triple covered in that matter, depending on the way they set up on the line. But, you know, I also would love to see them try to use both tight ends on the field with Dawson Knox and Kincaid and mix it up and make something a bit different that defenses have to worry about. So that's kind of my thing, guys. Go Bills. They're going to make it happen tonight, all right?
Thanks for the call, Anthony. Yeah, that's the thing, too. I wish they would change it up. I mean, where is Dawson Knox? Mm-hmm. I get he took a pay cut in the offseason. Like, the big pay cut that was talked about was Von Miller. But
so what?
But that's my thing. Like, he was still making plays for you.
Right.
He's a non-factor. I think week one, you probably convinced teams, or going into the season, you probably convinced teams in week one, hey, Kincaid's probably going to be the guy, what have you. He had a good rookie, very good rookie season, especially, you know, for Bills players mm-hmm. and Bills rookie tight ends. But by week three, you kind of knew, okay, Shakir's the guy.
Yeah.
He's breaking records in terms of, you know, passes caught consecutively. He was, like, I think the best pass-catching guy per EPA, receiver, tight end, and running back. I mean, he, through the first 3 weeks, very quickly established himself as, stop him, you got it.
Yeah.
And then he got hurt. So we don't even know what he really could have done in the Baltimore game. I mean, that game kind of got away from him pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets hurt. I mean, Shakir could still be having, even in these losses, having games where we're going like, okay, that's the guy. If you don't stop him, it's going to be a long day because he's got more yak ability than Beasley did, and he's getting open seemingly at a similar pop that Beasley did in his prime with Allen. But he's been hurt.
Right.
And that's my thing is you still have weapons. And ultimately, the defense has been great, at least in spot moments of the next man up,
mm-hmm.
right? All right, we Taron Johnson's injured. Cam Lewis, get in there. Matt Milano's hurt. Dorian Williams, get in there. You know,
and they were all making plays.
And they were making plays. And eventually, them being backups does come back to bite you. It's going to happen.
But
the offense doesn't have that.
There's still times where like those backups can prove stuff. But you're right. The offense doesn't have those younger guys or those unproven guys coming in. It's Mac Hollins.
I'm not even necessarily saying that. I'm more saying like Shakir's down. Kincaid. Samuel, I need you guys to go make a play.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And they're not. Yeah. And it's like, you guys aren't even like the Jamarcus Ingrams of the world. I'm not asking Tyrell Shavers to go out there and be a 6-catch, 75-yard guy. I'm asking Kincaid to be the number one or the first-round pick for the Bills from 2 years ago at tight end. I'm asking Curtis Samuel, and I think that's much more on scheming than anything, but I'm going to use him in this example. Curtis Samuel, be the $8 million a year guy and go out and make plays. And that's where my frustration is. I think it's a mix of the two's talent. I also think it's Brady
mm-hmm.
and just not getting these guys involved. Again, Samuel is just a bubble screen guy for these guys. He's not stretching the field. He's one of their faster players.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't do anything.
Well, and that's the frustrating part. Because like I said, I want to give the benefit of the doubt to Brady and say, hey, maybe he's got something in the works and he's going to, you know, show something as the season goes on, but last week was the time to show something. You were without mm-hmm. Khalil Shakir last week. You needed to get a win over that team because they're one of your rivals in the AFC in terms of getting the number one overall seed.
And somehow you were in that game after Allen goes 9-for-30.
Right. That's the craziest part of all is that they gifted you the game and you didn't play it correctly. You didn't, you know, leverage the game script the right way. And to go back to your point about Dawson Knox too, he has 5 targets this season. 5.
Surprised it's that many.
3 receptions for 30 yards.
I'm surprised it's that many.
We knew that Dawson Knox, his numbers were going to go down because Kincaid was supposed to be that new guy, that big, flashy new tight end. But the fact that there's been so many issues over the past few weeks with the offense, the fact that they haven't branched out to other options and they're just keep forcing it to the same ones, that's the problem. It's not the problem of who you have. It's the problem of not using who you have because you're not looking at everybody. You're looking at Mac Hollins, you're looking at James Cook, and you're looking at Khalil Shakir. And 2 out of those 3, that's fine. That's great. But 2 out of those 3 have also been hurt.
Yeah, they're hurt now. And again, Mac Hollins having 12 targets in the last 2 games combined. That to me is maybe the most worrying thing
mm-hmm.
over the last 2 weeks is the injuries. They've gotten bit.
Yeah.
Would you say there's 16 guys on the injury report?
There was. I mean, granted, some of them were just, you know, put on there because.
But it's they've got to be on there though. That's
right,
the thing.
Right.
Some of it's that. I think other stuff is just like why is Mac Hollins being targeted 12? and he's not necessarily even open. Mm-hmm. Some of them, yes, but other times it's like, why are we, no, what are
and
we
the
doing
one,
here?
But the problem is the ones that he's open, he's dropping them, and he's not getting to the ball.
Them.
Right, yeah. And it's, you know, when they brought Mac Hollins in, I thought, hey, that's going to be like a fun, you know, every once in a while, boom, there's Mac Hollins making a big play or just an important play.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been fine because then, you know, it would have shown you, hey, Keon Coleman's getting better.
Yep.
Khalil Shakir is being used. Curtis Samuel is being used. It's out of all the options, he should not be the first one.
Even Coleman, we didn't bring him up yet today, but I brought him up a lot last week. I thought there were some underlying numbers there too. I'm like, oh, he's getting open more. Okay, mm-hmm. We should be targeting him more.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Yeah. He's getting open when he's targeted. He seems to be open,
right?
But in terms of him actually separating it, no, he's one of the worst on the bill.
To be fair, though, I think
the roster construction again at their wide receiver position is wrong, and it's biting them immediately. You're seeing like Shakir goes down, and they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. To be fair with Coleman with the separation thing, though. Remember, he was drafted as a guy that can make contested catches.
Then you shouldn't have drafted him.
Well, right, I get that, but you're here, right? You have it. You're there. And if you can make him do that, if you can make him make those contested catches, which he's shown a few times this year so far, not mm-hmm. super hard ones, but still, then develop that. Focus on that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's so risky in this offense, especially. If that was, again, one of your minor options,
mm-hmm.
like how I kind of wanted Mac Hollins to be, where he's just every once in a while makes a play kind of guy, then that's fine. But one, that shouldn't be what you do for a first-round tight end. And two, that shouldn't be the main choice in your offense. That should be a smaller sample size.
Yep. Let's go to Paul here. Paul, how are we doing this morning?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well.
All right. Just one thing I wanted to touch on. You know, I hate to be negative on a Bills game day, but it just seems Brandon Bean isn't the best talent evaluator at the wide receiver position.
I agree.
And you know, it comes down every year. It's kind of like hockey with these backup receivers and like third and fourth liners. They just recycle these guys every year, and we're always like excited. Oh, this guy might make an impact. And then we get to the season, and it's just not there. We got Trent Sherfield last year, Deontay Hardy, Curtis Samuel, Matt Collins. None of these guys make any impact.
Even Isaiah McKenzie when they moved him to the slot.
Yeah, they always have that gadget guy in the slot that everyone always gets excited about. The last time we used that guy correctly was maybe with Dable with the jet sweeps and stuff, but outside of that, we really had no production. But, you know, you look at the offseason, and you can't tell me this team wouldn't be better with, like, a Deontay Johnson or a Darnell Mooney with Keon Coleman. Like, I don't understand why we paid Samuel when we could have got, you know, other guys that are proven. Deontay Johnson had 1,000 yards with the Steelers a few years ago. So that's just my thing. You know, I mean, Brady, I think you can't blame him too much because this is probably the least talent he's had as a coordinator. So, but tonight, I think tonight we got to get the run game going. You know, I just really don't trust these receivers against this good Jets secondary. So it's going to be a physical game. I don't expect a ton of points, but I wonder what you guys are thinking about the script tonight.
That's going to be exactly it, Paul. Thanks for the call. I think it's going to be a very close game that is going to have most of us
taking
heart medication during most of it. Because the idea of them losing three straight, and I agree with Paul on that too. I don't want to be negative on a Bills game day. They have also lost two straight. I'm not going to sit here and go, Bills game day, yeah! No, I lived through the drought. They lose once, and I immediately, like, alarm bells are going off.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that as a positive. I'm saying that's just more that scar tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to being, you know, 20-something-year-old that grew up in the drought. Like, they lose again twice now. I'm sitting here going,
losing is all we've known.
Like, what's going on? So, I want to be more positive. On the Deontay Johnson thing, he's going to be a free agent this year. He was traded from the Steelers to the Panthers. He may be, I think, more than anyone that's going to be available in free agency because it's not going to be the big names. The big names are going to get paid. I think I heard Jeremy bring this up too. It's a lot like quarterbacks, and that's 100% right. Johnson is a guy, though, when they have a lot of cap space available, I would be screaming for them to go at him.
Mm-hmm.
3-year deal at most.
Yeah, because you're not.
Get him on the books. That man gets open on a bad Carolina team.
Yeah.
He is regularly getting open. He's producing really well. You get him in here. Now, all of a sudden, you don't have that urge or that desperate need to go add in the first round. You can, and I wouldn't be against it, but you've then got 2 second-round picks. You can add another receiver there because I've brought this up a lot. The wide receiver position in the draft and in college especially has just gotten – it's exploded. It's amazing. But now you don't have to be forced to go get or trade up and go get the third wide receiver off the board. You can go get like the sixth, seventh guy off the board and kind of work them into a role where you just get their strengths. I think that's been a big problem with Coleman so far this year too, is that they're expecting him or need him desperately to be on the outside when he's a big slot. That's where he's best at, is being a slot receiver and just using his superior frame compared to everybody else and dominating there. They've needed him on the outside because they have no other outside wide receivers.
I think also to Paul's point there too, he brought up, you know, the last few years of free agent acquisitions, and we brought this up last week. I got the stats from the wide receivers they've gotten in free agency from 2021. Ready? Wide receivers. There have been seven of them that have played games for the Bills since 2021 as a free agent that signed here, whether it be, you know, go to free agency and re-sign with the team like Isaiah McKenzie or come in like Deontay Hardy. 839 receiving yards and seven touchdowns between seven players. None of those seven players played more than one season with the Bills, even the ones that signed multi-year extensions. This also includes guys on this year's team like Curtis Samuel, Mac Hollins. It's atrocious.
Yep.
I don't understand how you can get into free agency and go get these guys and think they're going to be great. And sure, we all sat here and were excited for some of them.
For some of them, there were underlying numbers that told you, hey.
Deontay Hardy specifically.
Deontay Hardy.
And even Trent Sherfield.
Yeah. There was a feeling of like, they might be able to do something. Yeah. Mac Hollins, like, we all like to poke fun at him. None of his numbers really said anything. There was an expectation of him being like the wide receiver four. They've just found their way to using him way more than that.
Yeah.
But like that's the thing, is like they've taken guys that maybe had fun underlying numbers and have just, I don't want to say tailspin, but I mean, you brought up the numbers. It's not good.
No, 839 receiving yards between seven players.
Yeah.
That's bad.
And I don't like doing hindsight as 2020 stuff, but like this is why you should have been trying to draft any receivers really in, you know, second to like fifth round, and not just guys that had special teams qualities. Like a Justin Shorter, or a few years ago, I'm blanking on Stevenson out of Houston.
Yeah, Marquez Stevenson.
Marquez Stevenson. They were just special teams guys at most. Mm-hmm. There was never any ability for them to actually be wide receivers, and I think that has limited them to where we are now, where if Shakir's out, we're sitting here going, I don't really know what they're going to do.
Well, and look at the 2022 draft specifically, right? I mean, that's the draft of Kyir Elam, which Kyir Elam hasn't really done too much this year yet, and it's still to be seen with him, but it's leaning more towards
I'll give him Elam, though. I mean, that was a year you desperately needed cornerback.
Right.
They ultimately do take two.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, Christian Watson goes the second pick of the second round. And sure, he's had his injury issues so far, but Wandale Robinson, someone that the Giants have been starting to use a little bit more, goes in the second round. John Metchie III also goes right after Wandale Robinson. Like, there's names to be had in this draft, and that, I think, was maybe the one you could have done it. Also, the Kincaid draft, just because of Zay Flowers being there. But
that problem you ran into is four straight receivers go right before you pick.
Yeah.
The receiver position went from, man, there's just chock full options, to there's literally no one left for us to pick.
Right.
If we pick somebody, we're way overvaluing them.
Yeah.
803-0550 is the number to call. What are your feelings heading into Monday Night Football as the Bills take on the New York Jets, looking to avoid dropping three straight? Again, 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. You're listening to WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Yeah, I mean, you go through a season, it's never a straight line in terms of the path to success, and you've got to go through the ebbs and flows of the season and manage them. And sometimes it's, hey, a gentle reminder here of, okay, yeah, this is the way that I've got to go about. And as you said, doing my 111th, and I know Josh is competitive as there is, and we have full confidence in him, and, you know, I'm confident he'll get back to doing that, and that's important for us.
There's Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott talking a little bit there on the offense. They have been sputtering, if that is the nice way to put it, over the last 2 weeks. They have not looked right at all, which is frustrating because, you know, the 3 weeks prior and really the week prior to Baltimore against Jacksonville, Josh, they looked unstoppable. Now, ultimately, looking at Jacksonville, you realize, meh, they're just bad.
They are
horrendous.
They are just stuck in purgatory. Like, I kind of feel bad for them.
Did you watch any of the London game?
I saw some highlights, yeah. Caleb Williams looked pretty good.
He looked
good.
But
at the same time, the Jaguars are really bad, so I don't know anymore.
That's like, more my thing is, like, I think it's just the Jaguars are awful. And I saw yesterday, I don't know if this is 100% true, but I did see it on Twitter that Doug Peterson said that they need a culture change.
Cool.
And I was like, that's you, man. Like, I wouldn't have said that. That's you, dude.
Right. Also, it is insane. They dropped 4 footballs in or around the end zone that would have been touchdowns. Gabe Davis being one of them. I mean,
Gabe had 2, I believe, right? I mean, he ultimately, I think, had 2 touchdowns, but he had 2 drops, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Oh, wow. Because I saw the one where he catches it, pulls it, like, over, and then literally gets punched in the face as the guy's punching out the football and loses the ball. I mean, that one you can't really do much on. I don't.
It's a tough scene.
I don't really know if you can blame him there. But
they are a rough watch.
Yeah.
Essentially fully 2 games. I didn't watch all of the London game because eventually I was like, okay, I got errands to run before the 1 o'clock window and this game's a blowout.
Right.
But like, they are terrible.
And I look at them
and
too.
The Bears are getting better.
Bears are 4-2.
But let's not act like they're an offensive powerhouse. Likewise with the Bills.
Bears are 4-2.
And actually, yeah, the whole NFC North is a lot of fun. But like, it looked so easy for Chicago to move the ball against Jacksonville. And I think Jacksonville was favored in that game too. And I'm just like, yes, something's got to be done there.
Well, and it's funny too because you look at the Jaguars and the Browns; they're both 1-5, and are they not basically the same team?
Oh man, they're in such bad spots.
They both have issues with quarterbacks getting their wide receivers the ball. Their wide receivers, when they get the ball, can't do anything.
Have their own issues,
and their defense has just not been there. Because even the Browns, who have a really good defense, just haven't.
It's been able to keep them in some games,
right?
But you're also seeing that wear and tear of just like, we can't be the only thing here.
We can't have just Myles Garrett winning us games anymore.
Yeah.
We have a quarterback that they're paying $250 million.
Even yesterday, though, they were in that game with Philadelphia, partially because Philadelphia is poorly coached and are horrendous.
That's another conversation. Nick Sirianni.
Did you see him jawing at his own fans?
Yeah, and then he brought his kid out to the post-game press conference.
I did see, because I wanted to make a comment about it. I don't obviously watch any of Philadelphia's post-game press conferences. I want to know, does he do this for like every win or what have you?
Yeah, that's fair.
It sounds like he does.
Okay.
This may be controversial. I don't really care. I don't like any coach that does that. Outside of winning a championship,
right?
I don't like any
coach. Like when Steph Curry did that with his daughter when they won the NBA championship?
That's great. Because all those questions probably should be softball questions. If you just won a championship, it probably should be how'd you get here, that whole thing.
Yeah.
A regular season win
over a bad Browns team.
Nick, it kind of feels like you're purposely bringing your kids out there as a shield.
Yeah.
Because what reporter, because we're all human, is going to sit there and go, in front of this kid's dad, I am going to absolutely drill him and say, hey, so you were just screaming at fans, your own fans. What is that about?
Also,
how
do you feel about your job security? How do you think you're going to lose your job?
I'm not saying it's an outright shield. It
looked like it. And it just, on top of that, with the fan thing, too, like, it just not a good
look. So bad.
Not a good
look. So bad. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Mike on the line. Mike, how are we doing today?
Good, thank you. I have 2 points real quick, and that's my first point is first down. I guess the last game it was 20 of 25 times on first down they ran the ball. I mean, if I'm the defensive coordinator for the Jets, I'm licking my chops at this point. You know, this team is so predictable on first down. And then when they do run it on first down, it's usually right up the middle. They don't run any pitch plays or sweep plays. It's mostly right up the middle. And my second point is the screen game. We're horrible at the screen game, and this has been going on for quite a while now. I can't remember a good screen game.
My entire life, yeah.
Probably Thurman Thomas.
I was going to say, Mike, honestly, you might be imagining the last time they had a good screen game. That's how long it's been.
And then my other point is, I don't know what their average is compared to the league averages on screen plays, but I can't imagine it's any good. So I guess that's all I'd like to bring up.
Mike, thanks for the call. In terms of that first down pass percentage, they are 29th in the league at 47.19%. They're just in front of Arizona, Tennessee, Pittsburgh. That is one of the worst groups you could be around. Mm-hmm. Arizona kind of feels like a little bit of an outlier there. I wonder why they're running the ball so much. Marvin Harrison did leave yesterday's game with a concussion. I believe that's what it was. But they should be throwing the ball more, especially with Murray. Yeah. Tennessee and Pittsburgh, though, the hell. Denver's throwing the ball more than you on first down. New Orleans is. Cleveland is.
I mean, we were talking in the break about a clip from Calvin Ridley's postgame press conference yesterday.
He's upset.
He used some expletives, but let's just say he wants the football more. Like, it's
he's upset.
He's very upset. And so you look at Tennessee, who, I mean, they have more and more memes pop up every week from what Will Levis does.
He's iconic.
And
so good.
I hate being in that conversation with the likes of those teams. Like, that's not where you want to be. And I feel like – I'm trying to remember the first 3 weeks because I feel like they weren't passing it on first down that much in the first 3 weeks along with the last two. But it's just – it goes back to the conversation of, like, how can you not change the scheme up because of what you've seen the past 2 weeks? It's got to be changed a little bit because the first 3 weeks, sure, look great, but – once it starts to go south, you have to kind of switch it up a little bit. And that means passing the ball more on first down. That means targeting different players, putting them in different positions and scheming them open in different ways. But they just haven't done that. And I don't know if it's going to take two losses to get that done.
In terms of passing on first down too, by the way, last year to finish out the year, they were 29th.
Really?
Only ahead of Denver, Baltimore, and Carolina. Again, this is passing on first down.
Right.
But yeah, they have become a team that does not do that nearly, I think, as much as they should.
Who are the top teams? Can you see that or no?
For do you want this year or last year?
Yeah, this year.
For this year, Houston leads the way at 70%. Vegas, Seattle, the Jets, which is wild, and then Cincinnati are the top five.
Okay. I was just curious how much it correlated to. I mean, sure, some of those teams are good. But
see, I'm going back to like 2022.
Yeah.
Buffalo's at 14.
Okay.
Tampa's in front at 70. Kansas City's at 66. Then back in 21, they were 17th. Mm-hmm. Kansas City third, Rams second, Tampa Bay first again. And then in 20, when the Bills kind of exploded onto the scene, 12th.
I was going to say, what was it when Brian Daboll was here? Because I'm kind of curious how much it's changed.
2020 and 2021, they were 12th and 20. And then in 21, what was it again? It was 17th.
So it's never really been a big part of the offense.
They've never led the league in terms of we're throwing first down.
But you're also seeing, even though it's never been a big part of their game, it's kind of proving to be. Mm-hmm. Because
I don't want them down there. I mean, if they're going to be in the middle of the pack, that's fine. Kansas City right now is 13th at 54%.
Right, but almost 55. You've seen them have success when they're at the middle of the pack. So it's kind of, it makes sense to think, oh, if they just get back up to those numbers,
it is interesting,
maybe
though,
they'll be better.
Looking at all these teams, like Houston, you'd probably say, okay, good for them. Like, they're up there. Vegas, they're not a good team by any means. Seattle,
yeah, but some of these teams don't have a running back. Like, Vegas doesn't really have a running back.
They don't have a running back. I'd also say a lot of these teams are down. You know, right. Vegas, I'd say, is down a lot. Seattle, for as fun as they are, they're not winning all the time. The Jets, they're down a lot. I mean, Rodgers in London had to, what, throw 55 passes?
Yeah.
Cincinnati, they're down a lot. Dallas, they're down a lot. Jacksonville, down a lot.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way, I guess. Cause Tampa,
Atlanta, they're throwing a lot.
Because this isn't just, you know, like this is the whole game throwing on first down. So if you're down in the fourth quarter, you're not going to be running the ball.
You're going to
throw a lot. So that does make sense. But
Washington's at 18th. Minnesota's at 19th.
Mm-hmm. I think that
Detroit's 23rd.
I think that's
24th.
Like that's why I think in this stat specifically, you can look at like that middle tier, right? From like 12,
which is where the Bills were.
From like 12 to like maybe like 22, 23. Mm-hmm. Those teams are the teams I think you should look at because those are the ones that they're probably not down that much and they're also probably passing on first down a good amount that allows them to be successful in their offense. Because if you look at the bottom tier, those are the teams that either have great running backs or they're just not competitive.
Yeah.
And if you look at the top tier, like you said, it's probably the teams that are down the most. Yep. So that actually, it's interesting how you can look at
that. So it's more you want that middle area.
Right. Middle in this case is good.
With them ultimately also, though, and I think this is a big point of it, though, they're still throwing the ball more than running the ball on first down.
Right.
803-0550, the number to call. We got Sal Capaccio coming up at 11 o'clock. Get more of an idea of what we should expect. Bills, Jets later on this evening. And then Patrick Hammer at 11:30. Get a little bit of a weather idea for tonight's game. Again, 803-0550 is the number to call. How are we feeling about tonight's game? Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 12 o'clock. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
WGR.
Paid attention to what happened in the Oklahoma game yesterday, but they planted your jersey midfield and stuck a flag through that. What's up with you catching some strays there?
It's just kid from Austin, Texas that went to Oklahoma and won his last two Red River games and being rent free in their heads for almost a decade now.
That was Buccaneers quarterback Baker Mayfield in his response to the Red River rivalry. Zach, how do you feel about that? Has he lived in your head rent free for the past 10 years?
Honestly, not really. No.
Okay.
I didn't like that Anthony Hill did it too, because I'm like, why? It has been like a decade, and also I'm like, Oklahoma's bad now. Like, and they are. They're objectively bad.
What was the score? 34-3?
34-3.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma scored 3 points in the first quarter and never scored again. I mean, it's not really a rivalry much anymore. And
I know.
Even though Oklahoma won last year, Sark's won two of the last three, and Oklahoma looks like a team that is reeling. I think they still have Alabama on their schedule. They've still got a few other teams on the schedule.
Yeah, so it kind of makes it an interesting comment from Baker. Like,
what is frustrating, though, is Baker is just part of a long line of quarterbacks that wanted to go to Texas that ultimately didn't get a scholarship to Texas.
Right.
And then played really well in college football. And it's so frustrating.
It is just kind of crazy that, like, he's from Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. and just, I don't know. Like, I feel like if you're from Texas, you want to go to Texas.
Wasn't he a walk-on at Texas? Or
at Tech. He was a walk-on at Texas Tech, and then got a scholarship there, transferred to Oklahoma, and then becomes Baker Mayfield,
and
we
then,
all know.
And then played Texas Tech against Patrick Mahomes in one of the highest-scoring football games.
It was a sweet
college.
Game. It was
like,
awesome.
Could you imagine, like, looking back at that Texas Tech roster, was Patrick Mahomes wasn't on the team at the time, was he?
For what?
Like, when Baker walks on.
No.
I was going to say, could you imagine seeing that roster and being like, wow, those two quarterbacks – we're on the same team at one.
They're going to be pretty good, and it's Tech of all places.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, the rivalry is still a lot of fun. I still love that it's at, like, you know, the Cotton Bowl. It's Texas State Fair, what have you. But hey, I will tell you, my stress levels for the game have gone down when, like, you watch that, like, Oklahoma already can't score, and then they're down all their top five receivers. They've already made a switch at quarterback. Like, their defense is awesome.
Yeah,
their defense is amazing.
Texas is staying at one. Right?
They're staying at one. Oregon moved to two after their win over Ohio State. And now next weekend in Austin, it is College Game Day as they take on number 5 Georgia. But here's the thing. I was more nervous about that game than I was the Oklahoma game. And Oklahoma's the rivalry game.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of it, though, is due to just the last few years. Like, Texas blows them out, or it's a close game because Texas turned the ball over 4 times.
Yeah.
And Ewers throws 2 picks early. I will tell you, there was about a 5-minute window in there right at the start that I went, it's the same game. I'm going to lose my mind.
We were watching a replay.
It's the same game. I was going to lose my mind.
It is really crazy seeing that Oregon-Ohio State ending.
So much fun.
I mean, that was a wild game. Also, I mean, there was a lot of great college football games this weekend.
Lived up to the hype.
The Ole Miss LSU game, that was really good. What else was that?
I mean, Alabama-South Carolina was awesome.
Colorado-Kansas State was even awesome.
At midnight.
Yeah. I watched the end of that. I was over at my buddy's house. We were watching that game, and I'm like, it's 1 in the morning. What's happening? Get this game over with.
This weekend of college football really lived up to the hype. It was a blast. Yeah. It was kind of pegged as like, it's going to be a really good weekend of college football. Mm-hmm. And there was like jokes about like, are you going to a wedding or are you watching college football? Like, that was a running joke for like week one. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, I had my own rooting interest. And then I went to the Sabres game later that night. And that was
great.
And that was a blast in of itself 5-2. As well. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. A good time. The arena was popping.
You got a Sammy goal.
I did.
Not many people can say they've been in attendance for a Matias Samuelson goal. There's only
I'm usually in attendance for like the 6 Peyton Krebs goals. That's usually what I'm in attendance for. Which, like, there was a play. I think he hits the post.
He almost scored. Yeah,
he hits the post, and I went, no way, no way, am I going to be in attendance for another Peyton Krebs goal? A lot of fun. 803-0550 is the number to call. Coming up after a quick timeout, we'll get a word in from our own Sal Capaccio, who is down in East Rutherford, New Jersey, getting ready for tonight's Monday Night Football game between the Buffalo Bills and the New York Jets. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until noon. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Nick Sirianni looked like an absolute clown doing all of that. I mean, the fact that you're going to sit up there and argue with people who spend their hard-earned money to come watch you play. If you don't put out a good performance, guess what? They have every right to boo you. And you need to take that because that's part of your job as a head coach. You can't have it one way or the other. Like, it's an all-encompassing job. And for you to sit there and then have your kids in the post game to kind of deflect from, you know, reporters trying to come after you, it's lame, it's weak, he's a clown. It just looks ridiculous.
Damian Woody there. I'm glad I'm not the only person. I didn't know that was what Woody was going to say there at the end, too. I don't know for sure I guess he brings his kids out for every home win, but to me it felt like, oh, okay, he's going to deflect here. Like, he's going to make sure that no hard questions are going to come his way, because Sirianni, outside of like Doug Peterson and Mike McCarthy, is like the main. Oh, well, Kevin Stefanski's up there, too. That actually don't even totally know. Nick Sirianni's felt like a guy that's going to get fired for, I would even say, like, months now at this point.
Right.
Since the Jalen Hurts piece came out.
Yeah. Now that Robert Saleh's gone, he's like, is he the favorite for the next coach fired?
Nah, Peterson. I think Doug Peterson probably first. Yeah. If we even get more in-season firings. They're not that.
Yeah, I think it depends, like, how long the Jaguars let this thing go. Because, I mean, 1-6. Come on.
It should be ending soon, but we'll see. Although, we're not really here to talk Jaguars and Eagles. No, we have one more game to wrap up week 6 of the NFL season. The Buffalo Bills are on the road to take on the New York Jets. And with that, we are joined by our own Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline, who is down in New Jersey. Sal, how are we doing this morning?
Pretty good. And all that with Sirianni's after a win.
Yeah, right?
Right? Think about that. That's crazy when you think about it, right? That's after a win, and they're dealing with all that in Philadelphia. Not too far from here, obviously, in Jersey. And it's a nice day here today, guys. I know that weather isn't the greatest in Buffalo right now, but 60 and sunny. It's going to be probably in the low 50s at kickoff, so a little chillier, and probably get into the 40s during the game. But no rain really in the forecast, so we're in for a nice day today and an interesting night tonight, of course.
We're going to have Patrick Hammer on right after you say, and he's going to come on and just be like, "No, it's great, it's perfect. Here's not great, but there, yeah, it'll be wonderful football."
Ask him about what the outlet looks for the series, too, because the Yankees start tonight in the Bronx here.
That is right. So, that is right.
You know, you get the Yankees and the Guardians, right? And you got just a little pet peeve of mine, by the way. I just think the baseball season's too long like this, which is you play these games, these cold weather city games in the playoffs. And to me, that's not – like I want to see baseball in warm weather. You think of the playoffs, right? You get to the CS series and the championship series. You get to the World Series, and you could get 40-degree weather. It's just, come on, what are we doing, right? Let's end the season a little bit early. Play some more doubleheaders during the season to shorten that season. Anyway, pet peeve of mine, and they'll be fine tonight, playing in the Bronx. But I don't like watching World Series games where it's like 39 degrees.
Yeah, and that's my thing, too. It's even a tough part in the beginning of the season when you're like, it's still snowing in New York and like they have to, postpone games or what have you. It's baseball.
Yep.
We don't need 162 games. It's so long. It's so long. But Sal, you're there. You're in New Jersey. The Bills, though, did seemingly get some good news over the weekend in terms of the injury report. Just one player is ruled out up to this point. It is Ed Oliver. They've got four questionables, but guys are starting to practice, getting out of those non-contact jerseys, what have you. They may still be somewhat compromised, but at least it's a somewhat good feeling because up to this point, man, that injury report, it seems to get longer and longer every day.
Yeah, guys, let's get to a Barnes injury report brought to you by the Barnes firm. Car crash? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Four players questionable for the Bills heading into this one. But as you said, a little bit of encouragement on them. Now, we know Ed Oliver is out. He's already been ruled out for the game. He's not going to play. But after not practicing throughout the week, wide receiver Khalil Shakir and running back James Cook both practiced on a limited basis on Saturday. Both are listed as questionable. What's interesting is if you had asked me a few days ago about either of these guys, I'd say, you know what? I give Shakir a fighting chance. It seems like he's did a little bit more as the week went on. We'll see. I give him a fighting chance to play here. I wouldn't give as much of a chance to James Cook. I guess I give him a fighting chance, but not as much. And then Adam Schefter reported that James Cook agency said that Cook is going to play.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see tonight if he's out there. And then you have Austin Johnson at defensive tackle is questionable. And Taron Johnson, who to me is much more on the other side of like optimism. They don't have a probable anymore, guys. Like the NFL did away with probable. I wish they'd bring it back because you have questionable, you have doubtful, and you have probable. Used to. Now you still have doubtful if a guy's doubtful to play. But they got rid of probable because anybody who's probable generally played anyway. I'm wondering if we still had probable if Taron Johnson would fall in that category.
Yeah, Sal, he's the one guy that I look on here, and I look at everyone listed on this injury report, and he's the one that I'm most optimistic about just because of the fact that he's been out for so long and he's had all this time to recover. And that questionable to me just feels more hopeful than the other three.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, especially with Khalil Shakir, I mean, that ankle is – I don't know. I don't want that to get worse as the season goes on and have him out for even longer. Like, in my eyes, don't force him back and just kind of wait it out as long as you need because, yes, he's the main part of the offense, but at the same time, you don't want to lose that main part of the offense for the whole year.
Sure, but, we're all on the outside here, right? Like, I don't know if they'd be, what we'd say, forcing him back or not or when he's ready, right? They would feel the same. I'm sure the Bills, they're not going to put him on the field unless he's ready. They know that, it's a long season, so if he's ready to play, they'll put him out there. And there's a lot of things you can do to kind of, it doesn't mean you have to be 100% to play, but at the same time, you have to weigh the risk of re-injury and how well the person's going to perform. We'll get elevations later today too, guys, by the way, because it's a Monday night game. The Bills can make those, and they'll be announced that by 4 p.m. 4 p.m. is the deadline for those today. So actually, I shouldn't say that. I think it's game time, the inactive list time. So it might be not 90 minutes before the game. We could get elevations. We'll find out if they bring anybody up as a wide receiver, and then that will give us an indication. If you get an elevation of Tyrell Shavers again or KJ Hamler, then it becomes much more questionable about Khalil Shakir. If you get an elevation of Frank Gore Jr., I think that says a lot about James Cook. So we'll find out 90 minutes before the game. But sure, I mean, you always have to weigh all of those things, Josh, about how, you know, the player is important to you, but at the same time, you don't want to put him out there, A, to re-injure, but also, if you can have somebody who's going to be much more effective, you have to think about that as well.
Well, and yeah, I was thinking about that too, because I look at, you know, Mac Hollins and Khalil, or Curtis Samuel on there too. With obviously they practiced in full on Saturday, but they were limited for the other parts of the week. And, you know, we haven't seen Curtis Samuel do too much so far. And with Mac Hollins, that's kind of a new one. So I wonder, you know, what do you think it's going to be like if those two are, you know, kind of laboring.
Well,
let me
just say, Mac Hollins got hurt last week's game when he got tackled on the sidelines. He came up there working on his shoulder. So they just put a Redgon contact jersey on him this week and kept him limited in practice so that he didn't re-injure that. That's my read of it, because he's good to go. He's going to play. Okay. But really, that's from Sunday's game. I know it was kind of a surprise. He never was officially injured in Sunday's game as far as like an official injury report, but I know they're working on his shoulder. So when you see that during the week, you're like, oh my God, what happened in practice? Nothing happened in practice. He had a Redgon contact to kind of make sure that, you know, I'm sure that, you know, nobody hit his shoulder or whatever, but he's good to go. And then Curtis Samuel starts off the week, doesn't practice, and then he's back out there, and not even in a red jersey. He was out there the rest of the week. So, you know, we've talked, how many times have we said all year, each week, we're talking about, well, he's not on the injury report, so why aren't you throwing the ball? Why isn't he doing this? Why is he doing that? Here's another game where, okay, he's healthy. He should be a big part of your offense, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, by the end of the week, he's a full participant. Although it being a toe injury kind of makes you think, all right, the turf toe has somewhat been an issue, but not enough to be put on an injury report. Sal, on the Jet side of things, just Michael Carter so far has been ruled out the cornerback. Yeah. I will tell you, though, and he's on the injury report for an ankle, but Aaron Rodgers, the last 2 weeks, I mean, he's had points where he's crawling off the field, the whole thing. He seems compromised at this point with this Jets team. Their offense isn't doing too much. Yes, the Bills are down Von Miller and Ed Oliver, but it does feel like this Jets offensive line can be had and has been having a really rough go of it recently.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that is I agree with you. He's been getting banged up a lot, and he's, you know, he said crawling around and the ankle. And then the Jets this week, they put him on the injury report, and then all of a sudden, like Thursday, they're like, yep, he's great, he looks fantastic, and they took him off the injury report, and he has no game status or designation. So they're sending out signals that he's fully able to do everything he's able to do. But hey, look, I mean, he's 40 years old, coming off an Achilles, been getting beat up. So all it takes is a couple of times where he has to scramble out of the pocket, gets hit a couple of times, and we'll see how that lasts, right? We all know last year here, Monday night, was the opener, and the Bills actually, you know, were the team that they were playing against when he got hurt and was lost for the year. In this situation here, you know, he's played. I thought that early in the year he looked more mobile than I thought he would, but the last few weeks, he has not looked as mobile, and that's because he is getting beaten up. If you talk to people here around New York and cover the team, they'll say, like, it's just the offensive line hasn't been that great. And by the way, guys, that's why they haven't been able to run the ball. They just cannot run the ball. I think tonight they're going to try to make a much more renewed, committed effort, especially with Todd Downing now calling the plays and Norman Nathaniel Hackett. I think this game is the Jets are going to come out, and they're going to try to run the ball 50 times if they can against the Buffalo Bills.
Well, so continuing on with that, I mean, it happened so early last week that it's somewhat has been forgotten. But yeah, Robert Saleh is out as head coach. Todd Downing is now the play caller. It's not Nathaniel Hackett. Jeff Olbrich is the interim head coach. There's a lot of changes going on with the Jets. You kind of mentioned it there. You think there's going to be sort of a renewed effort in trying to run the ball. But this Jets team, I mean, they've had a real struggle at scoring. To me, at least, just again, on the outside looking in, not having really talked with any Jets reporters, this feels like it's going to be a low-scoring, if you're a neutral fan, probably boring game to watch, and you just kind of try to find a way to win. At least that's how it feels to me.
Yeah, I think, what did Jeremy say? What's the over-under? 42, 42.5 or something like that tonight? I heard him say it this morning. 41.5, it's down to what I have here. That's Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers, 41.5, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the line has also swung a little bit more towards the Jets. The Bills were favored by like 2 to 2.5. It's down to 1 point.
Yeah.
Some money coming in on the Jets, obviously. So this should be a really tight game, a low-scoring game. I agree. This is a Jets defense that is number one in yards per play against and number one in yards per play on the ground against. And even I'm sorry, through the air. Even on the ground, they're top 10. They're ninth, I think, in yards per play. So you have to figure out some ways to, you know, move the ball. And I think points are at a premium tonight. You know, the first few games, Sean McDermott's been pretty aggressive. You know, he's gone for it on fourth downs early in the game. I know there's been one or two where fans can, you know, say, oh, he should have gone for it. I get it. Mm-hmm. But he's been pretty aggressive, actually, early in games. I wonder if this is a game where it's much more conservative, field position battle. You take field goals when you can get them.
And Sal, last thing for me here, and I don't want to be too negative, but I mean, this is a team that has lost two in a row and honestly have really not looked good in either game. I mean, last week they put themselves in a position to win. The defense was playing very well, but ultimately I don't think any of us left that game feeling great. You know, what's your panic level now if they do drop three in a row and go from ultimately their last win being such a dominant win over Jacksonville to what we've kind of seen over the last month or, you know, almost month? It's very stark compared to the start of the season.
It is. I don't know if panic is the word I would use. I don't think you have to panic when you consider this is a team that had that was three games behind a division leader last year with five to play, mm-hmm. and still won it. It's a team that a few years ago was two games behind a division leader with four to play, the Patriots, and still won it. I think that was the case. There are still guys after tonight. There are still 11 games left in this season. I mean, we are really kind of a quarter or a third of the way through, right? And I'm also not saying here, oh, everything's fine. If they lose tonight, everything's fine. That's not the case. If they lose tonight, they're 3-3. They lose a hold of the division. And obviously, it's concerning. There's no doubt about that. I think there are some much different games coming up, though. Much more, you know, there's an opportunity here to go on a run. 3-4 wins, and you could be looking at something different. I think much more tonight is about, I want to see them kind of fix some of the things that have gotten them to this point the last 2 weeks. You know, what's happening with the wide receivers and separation and Josh Allen? You know, I need to, especially from the offensive side, but even a couple of things on defense, but especially from the offensive side, I need to see them look better tonight. And, you know, if you come out of this game and the offense looks a lot better, but they lose, sure, it's going to be frustrating. We're going to talk about it. Oh my God, here we go. There'll be some sky is falling mentality, no doubt about it. But I think that feels different than if you go into this game and they look the same the way they did last week, and especially in the first half, you know, against the Texans and against the Ravens. They can't, you know, move the ball at all. And then, you know, we're having serious conversations about where this team is and what they need to do over the next few weeks before the trade deadline and everything else. It's funny, Paul Esden Jr., Boy Green, was on with Jeremy this morning. I was on Paul's podcast earlier this week, and he said, it's so funny, the perspective of the Jets and the Bills. Like, to the Jets, like, this game, yeah, it's big for both of them guys. But if the Jets lose this game, they're two games, really two and a half games back of the division. It feels like their season might be over. Mm-hmm. Like, they have such a hole to climb out of to catch the Bills that you better win this game. If the Bills lose this game, it's like, yeah, it kind of sucks, but you know what? You're still 3-3, and they've done this before, and they came back in December after, you know, being down three games to play with the division. So I don't feel it's the necessarily sense of urgency like that for the Bills, but I do feel that this is a game where you can put some distance between you and the division and feel a lot better about yourself.
All right, Sal, we got a number of hours here before kickoff. So what's the plan for today? Got anything fun kind of set up? I mean, you mentioned the Yankees, but that's going to be going on literally right at the same time as the Bills.
You think I could make first pitch at 7:30 and then kick off at 8:15 here? No, I don't think so.
I'm not going to push it, but I won't fight you on it.
So there is a mall located literally like right across from our hotel. I'm going to head over there.
There we go.
A little bit later. Eric Wood and I were talking about that, and we were working out this morning. No, I saw Eric downstairs. We were working out, and I'm like, you know, there's a mall across the street. We should kind of take a walk. There's a really nice pier. We're in Jersey City, and there's a great, great like pier right near where we are, and it's just an awesome walk, and it's a great, great view of Midtown Manhattan from there. So yeah, there's a lot of cool things to just kind of walk around and do to kill some time today. And obviously, I'll be on later with Chopin the Bulldog, and they'll have the pregame show and the round. You know, head over to the stadium a little bit later today.
Sounds good, Sal. I'll talk to you then. Have a great rest of your day.
All right, you too. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. As we do get ready for our official pregame here on WGR beginning at 3 o'clock for that 8:15 kickoff, we did have a fight at Sabres practice today.
I was about to say, Zach, we have some interesting news from Sabres practice.
We had a fight at Sabres practice. Real quick note on them. They did win over the weekend, getting their first win of the season, a 5-2 one over Florida. But Darlene and Krebs got into a little bit of a scrap of practice after it appeared that both of them collided at like full speed during a drill. Teammates had to break it up. Paul, I think outright said, this is like the first fight I've seen in practice in years.
Yeah, there's a video on Lance Lysowski's Twitter of the two of them kind of in a scrum and teammates breaking them up. Dahlin dropped the gloves. The gloves are not on his hands. What?
You could take that a lot of different ways. In terms of like the fight, I think rightfully there are going to be people that are like, I love the grit, the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think I'd even be part of that group, especially especially knowing what their practice habits turned into and hearing former players complain about it. Mm-hmm. I like that. There's going to be others, and I think this is also somewhat right too in that we're 4 games into the season.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
and we're fighting at practice.
And this is how Paul worded it in his tweet. Just saw my first fight in practice in years. Krebs hit Dahlin, and Dahlin dropped the gloves and dumped him.
All right.
So, I don't know.
It's a big thing for me, though.
It's kind of crazy.
With Peyton Krebs, though, it's a big thing for me of like, someone's got to teach him to fight.
Yes,
like,
please.
If he's going to be like that, like scrappy, like player that you don't want to see in a dark alley kind of deal, I need you though. Like when gloves get dropped, that I'm not just going, hey, I'm just glad you got there. I don't need that. I need the excitement level to be up. Where now every time he gets into a fight, I'm like, ugh.
I just saw the video. There's video of the fight and the hit.
Okay.
Yeah, and basically, what it looks like happens is they're coming. It's almost like a kind of like a rush kind of drill.
Mm-hmm.
Someone passes it through the center. I think Dahlin receives it. I can't tell who's in what jersey because they don't have the numbers on,
yeah.
But whoever's in the red jersey gets absolutely leveled as the puck is arriving. I think it's Dahlin that gets hit. And then whoever it was gets up.
And he's pretty upset, yeah.
And they're pretty upset. And they just start going at it with each other. Yeah, and there are gloves dropped. Wow. I'm like breaking this down in slow-mo.
There was
a good 4 punches exchanged before the teammates get there.
I don't need the preemptive stuff that happened before the actual fight. Like the fight's fine, but like having already dealt with like Dahlin getting hurt seconds into the first practice of the year, I don't really need that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm less so on that. But I kinda like the grit the team is showing. They've played
emotion.
Well 2 games.
Emotion.
Yeah, they've played well 2 games in a row, getting 1 win. They should have gotten a win against the Kings, but here we are. Real quick, though, Sal brought it up in terms of elevations we could see today. I will tell you, Josh, I won't hate seeing somebody like Frank Gore Jr. get called up.
The speed, just,
I, just
potential I, there. Like
I want to see more from him. I really liked when they were able to get him as an undrafted free agent. I think running backs also... I hate saying it like this, but there are a dime a dozen, and I like the guy, and I would love to see him get. And he may not do much. I think you're all of a sudden getting to a Ray Davis kind of situation where he's like your running back one. But I would just like to see him, be able to do something. I really, really liked him, and I wanted him to make the team. Him being on the practice squad, I'm happy with. But I think that would be something I think I'd really enjoy for tonight. I'm prepared though, and like we just said, it was Sal, just a low scoring game. I like that's how Sal put it though. Like you want to see them fix some of the stuff that's been their issues, and that's maybe where some of the concern comes in if they're not able to fix anything. I will tell you though, and I get it's a year in transition,
mm-hmm.
so I'm not expecting them to be 14-2 or what have you, and go on these amazing runs. That I think is maybe where I am worried though. If they go to 3-3, if all of a sudden, like, I don't know if they have the horses to go on runs like that. The division's still bad. Don't get me wrong. And
right.
and Mike McDaniel did say today he expects Tua Tagovailoa to play at some point this year. Did not give like a game window though that he expects him to be back. He just said he's gonna be back in 2024. But for me, I think that's my fears. That it, I mean, they dropped to 3-3. Yes, they get Tennessee, but Tennessee's defense is good. Tennessee's defense is very good. And that's my fears. I don't want a year in transition to all of a sudden be a year in which they're fighting again to get in the playoffs like they were last year. They shouldn't be. This team should be better off. Yes, they've made some decisions that have put them into the situation they're in now. Mainly Stephon Diggs having the $30 million of dead cap on your books. I get it, but to me, looking at how their offense is, like I'm excited. Curtis Samuel, full participant in practice.
Mm-hmm.
I need to see them actually use him before I like actually get excited that he's back. Like for him to be able to play.
Yeah,
I'm not necessarily excited for Curtis Samuel to play because up to this point it's been bubble screens and kind of a nothing factor.
Yeah, with him though, I wonder how much that toe has played into things, but I also just need to see more. Like, if he's fully healthy, use him, please. Because what he's been doing, whether injury or not, it's not working. And sure, maybe it has been an injury thing. But if it's that bad, then what are we doing?
Yeah, then he really shouldn't have been playing because you were – I don't want to say he's wasting a roster spot. It's not that, but you're getting literally nothing out of him.
Right.
So and that I think is maybe less so than what he was going to be doing. What is maybe a distraction? Maybe.
Why are you paying a player $8 million to be a distraction?
Well, no, I'm saying if it's an injury.
Oh,
and that's what he's ultimately.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood where you were going.
Yeah. If that's ultimately what he has to be right now is a distraction because he's not able to full go. Why are you playing him?
Right.
You know, it's just, but I think Khalil Shakir, if he can play tonight, I think it's a massive bonus.
Well, like I said, though, with Sal, he's like, I'm so scared of him playing tonight because what if, you know, he goes out there and he looks fine and then all of a sudden re-aggravates something, then you have him out for longer term. It's.
I'd be more worried if it was a soft tissue thing.
Yeah.
Like a hamstring or a calf.
But ankles are weird, though.
Ankles can be weird, but
anyone
that's
sprained their ankle knows that once you sprain an ankle, it's never the same.
Yeah. I'm less worried about that.
But it wasn't an ankle sprain. It was just kind of an ankle injury. They never really called it anything, I don't think. It's more just like
an ankle.
Yeah. So you don't really know what's going on there. But like you said, it's probably fine. It's probably okay that it's not something more muscle related. But again, I get nervous with that stuff.
Yeah. 803-0550 is the number to call. When we come back, we'll get a look at the weather with Patrick Hammer, chief meteorologist over at WGRZ. Sal put it, looks like it's going to be gorgeous down in New Jersey. We'll get also a look here in Buffalo as well. Zach Jones and Josh Mitt here until 12 o'clock. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
Break it down. Stop. Have a time.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and you know what that music means. We go now to the Wester Hotline as Patrick Hammer, the chief meteorologist at WGRZ, joins the show. Pat, how are we doing this morning?
Well, a lot better now. Were you out and about this morning? It was like as miserable as it could possibly be.
The drive-in was the worst I've had in months. It was not fun.
I mean, we can get some rain around here in October, and it can be cool, but there was something about this driving rain in the 40s, wet leaves everywhere, sideways wind, and, you know, luckily most kids were off, if not all kids were off school today. So, you know, a lot of people were sticking around, staying home rather than traveling in it. But, yeah, conditions now getting a lot better here locally, that's for sure.
That was the kind of weather this morning. I was up at, like, 6:30, and I could just hear it, like, raining outside. And I looked at my, you know, like, you know, what clothes am I going to wear today? How cold is it? And it said, like, 50. And I'm like, nope, we're gonna pack it in for the day. That's always what this kind of weather does for me. Is like, the first time, I was like, come on. It's not Monday. It's still Saturday. Stop it. I think it's the weekend.
I think that's what added to it. It was a Monday. It's just like, okay. What else? You know, this is not how we need to start off a fresh new week.
Yeah, I felt like I was being punished. And then we had Sal come on last segment, Pat, and he's like, "Oh, it's beautiful here in New Jersey." I'm like, "Thanks, bud. It's great."
Yeah, I heard him with Jeremy this morning, and he was like, "Yeah, we got there and we went to the other side of the front, and it was like in the 60s, and it was lovely." And it was miserable, but hey, I'm seeing a little peek of a blue sky, so all is not lost for today. But I will say we could see a little bit of more of this in the days ahead. So let's talk football instead because the weather's kind of crummy here.
And for that, the Bills are wrapping up their 3-game road trip now in New Jersey. Pat, it does sound like it's going to be a wonderful night, though, for football. No real rain or anything like that. The Yankees are also starting up the ALCS.
Yes,
it seems like a perfect night for sports in October.
It's going to be what a setup. I mean, for those that – you know, just all the sports going on in New York with the Yankees and the Bills and the Jets. So the weather looks fine. Okay, so oftentimes, you know, rain that moves through here is destined for New York City and New Jersey. That's not the case here. The rain should avoid New York and stay New York City and stay north. So tonight looks relatively clear. It'll be cool. It'll be a little bit on the breezy side, especially for the first half. The wind should ease down, and we're not talking about gusts, but we're talking about a 10 to 15, maybe 20 mile an hour breeze. But that's the only real weather concern, if it's even one at all. The good news is it'll be dry, a little cool, but comfortable, and a good night for passing, let's hope.
Yeah, I was just about to ask. So it's going to be more of a pass-friendly game than a rushing-friendly game, probably, in this scenario.
Yeah, I think so. No, I will. I maybe a little teaser here. Adam Bonini, you know, with Channel 2, was just interviewing Boomer Esiason about this game. And his take was the Bills are going to be coming into a buzzsaw. I was like, okay, well, that's nice. I was listening to this interview, and that's one person's take. So if Josh has receivers get synced, they've got the weather on their side to produce a nice little passing offense, maybe we can turn that buzzsaw off. but all in all, it's looking pretty good tonight.
Pat, how have you felt about the last two games for the Bills? I mean, we're bringing up the passing offense now. I mean, the first 3 weeks it looked perfect. Allen is offensive player of the month in the AFC. Khalil Shakir is the number one receiving option in EPA. I mean, they looked great. All of a sudden, the everyone eats thing was working, and then the last 2 weeks, they struggled to get first downs. I mean, Allen goes 9 for 30 last week in passing. It has been a stark 180 in terms of their passing offense.
You know, I was watching a lot of football yesterday, and I was watching, the Commanders game and others, and I was like, why can't we do that? Mm-hmm, all these, downfield passes and completions over 20 to 30 yards, and it seemed kind of easy. And that's something that, we're very good at doing if everything lines up right. So, yeah, you think about last Sunday in particular, I mean, just everything seemed out of sync. There were some thoughts, even though there were no interceptions, it reminded me a little bit about the Jets game last year, yep, where Josh was just not able to connect on the medium or even deep ball, really. My thoughts on the last two games are, okay, I can't imagine three of those in a row with Coach McDermott and everything else. I just can't imagine that. But I also know that our receiving core is yet to really show itself. And, a couple of players that we're all thinking about together is an example. We need to see more from some of our receivers, and hopefully tonight's the night. But we need to shake off last Sunday with that, what was it, 9 of 30 pass attempts, completion rate. What was it, 9 of 30?
Yeah, he finished 9 of 30.
Yeah, okay. Got to be better than that, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the Jets, too, I mean, we're maybe we're finally going to see Josh Allen versus Aaron Rodgers. We got four plays of that last year, and then it kind of went kaput. At this point, though, some of the excitement about last year was, what's Rodgers going to be with the Jets? He's a little bit off in his last year and some change with Green Bay. It never obviously got off the ground. Now this year, we kind of have a look at it, which is their offense really doesn't move the ball very much. It's not as flashy as you'd maybe think an Aaron Rodgers offense is. The Bills aren't either. It feels like, to me at least, Pat, this game feels like, if you had said on paper, it's like, oh man, Allen versus Rodgers, this is going to be amazing. I could totally see this game ending 20-17.
Isn't that crazy to think of Rodgers and who he is and how he can score, and Allen the same way? You would think this would be just this, crazy score game. And it just doesn't seem that way, with Rodgers looking kind of old, right? And not as mobile as he did, let's say, in game two for him this season. And really not having the offense that we're used to having. It could be a low-scoring game. And I think we're all very interested to see how Aaron really looks. We all commented, and I've heard it on your shows, that he looked slow and having to get the ball out quick because he can't really scramble much. So it is going to be so interesting just to see how he looks, especially with this new coach behind him.
I think that's the other thing, too, is the other side of the ball for the Jets. I mean, the defense has always given the Bills some issues here, but I feel like maybe we're going to, see something turning here. I don't know. The vibes are never good against the Jets defense, but something, for some reason for me, feels different about this game.
Yeah, I mean, from what I heard, again, listening to you guys, Sauce Gardner hasn't been as great this year as he has been he was last year, so maybe there's a better outlook for us against their defense. But there's just this, like you said, it's this Jets mystique they just pose problems. And we've seen that the last couple of years, and it's never been easy against the Jets. Even though we blew them out the second game last year, which is the year do you remember? That's when Josh made that comment, "I'm back."
Oh, that's right. Yes.
That was the game. He goes, "I'm back." And so hopefully that's what he's saying tonight, right?
That'd be nice. That'd be a nice way to end out. Because they're also, this is kind of ending the primetime window here as well. I mean, this is their last weekday primetime game, but I think their last primetime game until San Francisco, which is later on in the season. So our sleep schedules will at least get back to normal. That's exciting.
Yeah. It's such a, nobody wants to hear us complain, but these 8:15 kickoffs are just, in all honesty, the way I watch the game is I watch the first, I get up so early, the first quarter, then I have to record it and literally watch it. I play it back in the morning as I'm getting ready for work, as I'm dressing and getting my breakfast ready. I'm kind of speeding through it because I certainly don't want to get to the station and find out there or hear it on the radio on my drive in. I need to see it for myself. So, yeah, I'm kind of ready for some 1 o'clock and some 4:25 games, that's for sure.
And then we did mention them earlier when we were bringing up the nice weather in Jersey, but in the Bronx, the Yankees and the Guardians, how are we feeling about this ALCS, Pat?
Okay, so I'm not as big of a baseball guy as I used to be. I know there's a lot of Yankees fans, and I know my partner in crime here, John Scott, is a huge Guardians fan, so I'd like to see his team win. I don't know. Are you excited for a possible Mets-Yankees series?
Yes,
I don't know.
Yes, it needs to happen.
Okay. You're right. I just think from a national perspective, it's just not going to – I remember when the Giants and the A's were in the World Series. This was before your time. This was in 1989. Mm-hmm. So all the fans were basically in one metro area, or most of them anyway, right? So fast forward to now, you have the similar setup where you have a subway series as opposed to a bridge series, as we called it back then. I guess maybe at the end of the day it would be fun to see that. But I think the Yankees have the upper hand.
I think just a big part of me is I just don't want to see the Dodgers in the World Series.
No. Because you're an Angels fan. You don't want to see Shohei Ohtani there.
As a scorned Angels fan, I'd like for Shohei's first season in the other LA team to not go as perfectly as it could. That'd be nice. I'm not asking for too much, I think.
Yeah. Again, growing up a San Francisco Giants fan, the Dodgers were always my enemy. So, I wouldn't. I could pass on them.
Totally get it. Pat, thanks so much for joining us today, and enjoy the game tonight. Make sure we'll hopefully get this game over with quick so our sleep schedules can go back to normal.
Oh, can't wait for next Sunday, by the way, Titans game. The weather looks awesome. So
beautiful. And it's a 1 o'clock kickoff. Beautiful weather. Love to hear it. Pat, man, thanks for joining us. We'll talk again soon.
Bye-bye.
That was Patrick Hammer, the chief meteorologist over at WGRZ, getting a good weather update. It's always weird to get good weather, like late in October, into November, what have you. But it is nice that, like, tonight they're going to have good weather, next week in Buffalo, hosting Tennessee looks to be good weather as well. I know a lot of people still bring up the dome talk and everything like that, but you're in Buffalo. You should be outside. I think you should be outside, even though I'm not necessarily somebody that likes going to football games and sitting in the cold. And that's what they should be. But knowing this Bills offense kind of needs all the help they can get to not have a weather event. Kind of a positive.
Right, yeah.
Kind of a positive.
Look at that. You can, at least that's a box checked for. Can't use it as an excuse. Can't use it as a reason why things went wrong.
Yep. 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt here for just a little bit longer. We're going to be on till noon. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as you're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We've also been getting connect to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We're going to go to Brad here, who tweets in, better schemes, need separation on the outside. Use Samuel on the outside and Coleman in the slot on a few plays to try it out. Stop adding an eligible lineman and then run it. I don't think they've ever thrown the ball when doing it. Think it will be a kicker game. Man, I hope not. I hope not. I'm okay with low scoring. The idea, though,
Do you remember the Bills-Jets game from 3 years ago.
They all blend together. They're the same games.
Okay, well, there was a Jets-Bills game where it was literally just field goals.
I remember that game. That was in the COVID season.
Yeah, and Tyler Bass was, like, nailing them. It was 9-6 at halftime.
It sounds awful. Eventually
there was a touchdown, but I just remember there being so many field goals and like both teams just being bad.
I like this idea though of using Samuel on the outside and Coleman on in the slot. Again, that's been my big thing too. Look, Coleman is not getting open on the outside. I thought there were potentially he was with the, like, that win rate. That's not at all what that is. He's not separating.
The Bills won 18-10 in that game.
Not a real game.
Yeah. Was that the 2020 or 2022 season?
That was the 2020 season. Tyler Bass went 6-for-8 on field goals, as long as the 53-yarder.
Yes.
Still missed two, though. Interesting.
Sam Darnold, 120 yards, 2 interceptions. Vintage New York Jets Sam Darnold.
Oh, my gosh. If we get that game from Monday Night Football, that's not fair to
Allen
anybody.
Allen had no touchdown passes.
That's not fair to anybody.
There were no touchdowns from the Bills in that game, actually.
Yeah, see, that's not fair to anybody. We need better than that. They should be better than that.
Allen threw for 300 yards in this game.
And he didn't score a touchdown. Wow.
Horrendous.
What a game.
Not positively.
But think about it. I mean, that's a season where the Bills, it's the 2020 season, right? Yeah. So the Bills end up going 13-3 in that year.
Yeah.
And, like, they had a game in there where they scored just only field goals and won. Also where it brings me back to this season of like, it doesn't matter how you get there because the end of the season record is what people are going to remember. Like, you don't even remember this game, and it was in one of the best seasons of the Bills in recent memory.
So I don't remember it. It was because it was the outlier of a great season in which they were scoring a ton.
There was no
this
other
year's
game.
Been. We're getting close to half the games they've been good on offense, half the games they've been horrendous. We'll see how tonight goes.
That game was the only game that season where they scored under 20 points.
See, I mean, it was the true outlier. That's my fear is like, you know, that year it's like, oh, all right, that's an anomaly. The Jets are very good on defense. This year it's like you get a team that's solid on defense. I'm worried. Houston's not that good on defense.
I lied. That was the only win that they scored under 20 points. The losses that year, they scored 17 points and 16 points. But one of them was that weird Tuesday game against
Titans. Tennessee, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, sorry. I'm so fascinated by that game. I can't not think about that game whenever I think about the Jets because I just remember being so frustrated because I'm like, we're winning, but what's happening?
It sounds like Brad, I think that's going to be that kind of game, though. If it's going to be a kicker game, right. I just don't.
I
don't think the confidence is there with Bass anymore. I don't think the team really has all that much confidence in him.
I don't know, though, because the way that the weather is shaping up tonight, I feel like you're going to have – because that game, I remember specifically, and other games like that, you've had just bad weather as part of the recipe for – field goals only or heavy on the kickers.
Yeah.
But I feel like tonight with what Pat Hammer was just telling us is the weather sounds like it's going to be pretty good. So I feel like in terms of, you know, things that the Bills can kind of not have to worry about, there's a lot of things going in their favor. You have players coming back from injury. You have just the advantage of just going against a team that's in disarray. I mean, they fired their coach in the middle of the season. That's just not great vibes for a team.
No, and that's something we haven't really talked about a lot today, though, but that is something for me where I think a lot of people maybe would expect, like, oh, they're going to get that new coach bump.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Just don't think so. Yeah.
And to be fair,
that
if
team
the coach
already felt like it was on the precipice of tilting.
Yeah.
And I don't think Todd Downing changes much in the offense.
If the coach was that big of a problem, though, then maybe. But, like, I don't really think that Sala was
it's
that
not, it's not
big
how
of
it sounded in the Jets locker room.
Right. Because, sure, maybe Rodgers had a problem with him. But other than that,
it sounded like a lot of the Jets players really liked Sala.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to that point, too, if it's Rodgers, which we don't know, but hey, it's Aaron Rodgers. You never know.
Just throw it out there.
If he is the guy that kind of facilitated this, or at least, like, you know, got the conversation going of getting him fired in midseason, there's going to be a lot of players that resent that and that are upset about that. And that can cause more problems in your locker room. I think the only good thing they have going for him is that their defensive coordinator got promoted. And
he also seems very liked in the locker
right.
room.
Right. So there is positive there. But I don't like the way, if you're a Jets fan or a Jets player at this point too, I don't think that there's great vibes at all, even though Your quarterback, your quarterback's happy now, maybe, because the coach is gone. Okay, cool.
Yeah, you're 2-3. The season is far from over, but vibes are not that great.
No.
That's going to do it for myself and Josh Schmidt. Coming up after a quick timeout, 3 hours of One Bills Live as we do get ready for Bills Jets tonight. 3 p.m. We'll officially begin pregame right here on WGR for that 8:15 kickoff. Should be a blast. Thanks for joining us, and go Bills. This is WGR.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.